Hello and welcome to Virtues for Life. This program is a conversation between Brahma Kumars and Kumaris about virtues. Virtues are the foundations of our lives. Our virtues, values, qualities and powers denote who we really are as individuals, and they also define the contribution we make towards society. The laws of spirituality have taught us that if we really want to be a catalyst for global positive change, then the principal way is for us to change ourselves. And to change ourselves involves developing, sustaining, creating, inculcating virtues into ourselves. Anyone who gives time for spiritual practice and who gives space for the spiritual component in their life, they will not be just a consumer, but they will be true contributors to make this world a better place to live. Today, we will be talking about the virtue of contentment, and I have with me in Godlywood Studio today, Rosemary Turberville. Welcome to Virtues for Life.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. Rosemary, you are a mother. You have a professional background as an administrator. You have grown children, and so you are fully engaged in looking after one of the centers of Raj Yoga in England, the center at Manchester. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you maintain the virtue of contentment by juggling all these different parts of yourself.
Well, perhaps the truthful answer is that I don't maintain total contentment, but of course the idea is to be content. And that is a lifetime's work in itself, to be honest, because I think it takes in all the other virtues as well. I think life has to be a balance, you know. As a mother, and before I was involved with the Brahma Kumaris, I always wanted to be good. I wanted to be perfect. And of course, it was a tremendous strain, because I never could be.
Are you talking about perfectionism?
Yes, I think I am.
Why do you think it is that so many of us think that perfect means a sort of an extreme and unattainable condition?
Possibly for me, I don't know about other people, but I think for me it's because you wanted people to like you, people to think well of you. I didn't want criticism. It made me fearful that somebody might criticize me. So I wanted to do something so that they wouldn't criticize me. And you have to be perfect to do that, and of course, impossible.
So that's operating in rather a defensive type of way.
Without
so how has your spiritual practice enabled you to shift from that into that balance that you were speaking of just now?
I think deep understanding of who I am.
So who are you?
Well, I remember as a child I used to say to my father, you know, what is moving this? What is moving this hand? How does the body move? And nobody could answer.
Very interesting for a child to
yes.
ask such a question.
Yes. And so I had to wait 54 years to find out. But it's for me it's the inner being. People call it soul, people call it energy, spirit, it doesn't matter what, it's the inner. And for me, it is the inner work that I've done since I've become a Brahma Kumari that has enabled me to sample contentment.
So in your relationship with your children, how does contentment work? Because I know that many of the people with us on the show today have children, and sometimes the relationship is good, sometimes it's fraught with difficulties.
I think one of the things that a parent wants to do is, even though they don't think it is to control.
Okay.
And they want what they think is the best for their children. And what I really understand is that, and even as a child, as babies, I felt they don't belong to me. Which was an interesting thought, because I didn't have the knowledge that I have now. But the fact that everyone has their own journey in life. And I can't stop or specify what a child is going to do. I don't actually know what their life's journey is.
So do you start thinking of that child as a soul, an eternal, even though the body may be a child's body, but the soul is in a way always adult, isn't it?
Yes.
So how has that vision on your children affected them?
Well, I think that personally I probably wasn't a very good parent during that first part of their lives. They're in their late 30s now, approaching 40. And I think because of my new understanding with the Brahma Kumaris, I have learnt so much and developed so much with the children, treating them as adults all the time, understanding that they are different. They're not going to do what I think. They're not going to be what I want them to be. I remember as around the teenage times, it was, you know, people in the society that I was in at the time said, well, you know, which university is your son going to? In rather a snooty way. And I said, well, as a matter of fact, he's not going to go. Oh, sort of end of conversation. And parents' expectations are huge, yes. And I feel sorry.
So it's a really terrible pressure for the children.
Huge, huge pressure, and we don't need to, because a child has its own route of journey of the way it's going to go. And if a child's going to be a carpenter, it's fine, as long as they're happy.
So which way, what was the route that your son took?
Well, he rebelled, of course. He was rebelling, I think that's what it was, because he didn't understand himself either. Unfortunately, I'd divorced his father, their father, and remarried, and that had its own difficulties with stepchildren and all this sort of thing. And you'd never know what trauma a child is going through from what you've said to them, what their circumstances are. And really, the only way I have discovered so far, there's still a lot of learning, this whole thing for me is a time for learning, is to actually listen to them and treat them as human beings who have a mind of their own.
Do you think one of our problems is we think of children as objects?
Yeah, yeah. What that's going to reflect me. That's the big problem. So many parents, I feel, are concerned about the reflection of their children on them. So that if they're not behaving properly, oh my goodness, what's it going to do to my friendships? What are people going to think of me?
It Which affects your reputation.
Totally. Isn't that nonsense?
Well, I mean, it's real.
It happens.
But at the same time, it's a tremendous limitation which causes us to maybe move away from our virtues and instead of that develop character defects. You mentioned trauma, mm-hmm. and I always associate trauma with the development of character defects.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak about what you feel about that?
Well, I think trauma can shut you down. Mm-hmm. It can suppress you. One of my children was, well, they both are particularly loving, and I think that some of that was suppressed because of certain trauma that they had.
Do you think when parents divorce it is a trauma for children?
My own parents were divorced, so I'm absolutely sure of it. Half the problem is that you don't know what's happening. You have a sense. I got on a plane from Tehran at the age of 11, and I came home and met my brother, who was 4 years older than me, and I said, don't worry if mother doesn't come home. So there was a sense of knowing, even at 11, obviously because you see them warring and all this sort of thing, but you just know. So adults forget how astute actually children are.
Do you think that if you take yourself back to that 11-year-old moment, from that time you were no longer a child?
Without doubt.
So you become a little adult, but yes, without necessarily the tools for life that you need.
Yeah.
Now, there must be lots of children in this world. I think the divorce rate is more than 50% in many places. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how can we be helpful to children who are traumatized by the divorce of their parents?
Speaking personally, I think the thing to do is not to blame. Because it's very easy to say that I'm like this because my mother or father did this. And I've learned throughout life that they did their best. They didn't know any better. It was their journey too. And one of the two words that I love very much is let go. Any feelings that come up of pain, because these things are painful,
yes,
definitely painful, is to let go and understand that I don't need to feel that pain anymore. Actually, nobody makes me feel. I am. It's an internal journey, this, and it's internal work.
When you are in pain, you are in pain. How can you be not in pain without suppressing it and
yes,
manage the pain? Because yes, pain management is a big thing.
Yes, it is.
Does spirituality help you manage pain?
Without doubt.
How?
Well, understanding that we're all together for a reason. And that we, in the Brahma Kumaris particularly, we talk about karma. And I understand much more about karma than I did before. And still only a smidgen, but it's extremely deep. And we are together to settle some karmic account. And I've actually, after my father's been dead for a long time, my mother died the year I came into this knowledge, in 99. And I hardly think about them now.
So you've been able to move on.
Mm, mm.
And have you been able to communicate some of that feeling of letting go, maybe viscerally, to your children?
Yes, I think so. I think we use the word in the BKs, attachment.
Yes.
And it is, of course, parents are deeply attached to their children, usually. I don't think my mother was, but that's another thing. And I'm learning that I think I probably overcompensated when I divorced, and then of course remarried, and there were problems with that remarriage too. And so you tend to overcompensate because there's probably guilt within me, there's a feeling of letting them down and wanting to make them feel better. Are they lost? You know, you spoil them, all sorts of things, which actually can turn them. So discipline actually is very useful, but I didn't have it with them.
What sort of discipline do you think is going to be the most helpful to help the family move through a big accident like that?
I think probably new understanding, because I wouldn't have treated them the way I did if I had known what I know now.
What would you have done in retrospect?
I think because I've got to know myself better, I'm not trying to please them, to make up for things. I would be able to stand in my own self-esteem and say, I don't agree with you doing that. Don't do it. Whereas you allow them too many things.
As a compensation.
As a compensation. And because
so
I didn't
really
know myself.
What spoils children.
Yes, in my view.
How do you distinguish in working with children as a parent between loving them and spoiling them? Because I hear it so often, when somebody's being really nice to their children, others will say, oh, you're spoiling them. And I say, get out of here. This is love. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, it's material things versus time, genuine, pure love. Because even loving your children, you have to be aware, do you want something back?
Of course, selfish.
It's the selfish. And a parent can be very selfish.
Well, the child makes the parent look good.
The child makes... But bad. Also they make them dependent, you know. Who do I think of when I want to talk to somebody? Is it my children? Or is it God, in my case? You know, this is attachment. This is very important to realize that they are separate beings. They are not. Yes, they were born through me, but they're totally separate. Their soul, the body was born through me, but the soul is eternal. It's original, and they have their own qualities, and I can learn from them too.
So it's very important to be able to see a person as a soul rather than as a possession of mine.
Without doubt. Because I'm using it for my own benefit in those circumstances.
It's a huge shift, I think, for people to say to themselves, this is not my child. This is not my husband. This is not my... To have a different, non-attached, but loving relationship. How does that help us become content, even when the family may be in upheaval?
I think for me, letting people be the way they're supposed to be at all times. Whatever they're doing is what they're supposed to be doing, and I mustn't be influenced by it.
So what is the energy that determines what somebody is supposed to be? Who decides?
Accepting what they are doing. It is the way they are supposed to be.
So what they are is what they're supposed to be. There's nobody who decides that.
They decide it. But they may not know that at the time. They may not have control because they don't have understanding of who they are.
So where do you, how do you work with freedom and responsibility?
It's a tough one. And I think every family will be different depending on their circumstances and their nature and the child's nature. Because if you're child is going, there's a lot of drugs around these days. There are very few children who, especially in the West, who haven't done drugs of some sort.
What is it in a child that makes them want to take drugs?
Because they don't know who they are. They have low self-esteem. They want to escape from what it is the world is pressurizing them to do. Education in the West is extremely pressurized now. They're starting to stream five-year-olds. You know, it's a nonsense, because people are not allowed to be and develop in their own way, in their own time.
So, do you think that this is a kind of abuse of children?
I hadn't thought about it as abuse, but because you always think of the really nasty stuff when you think of abuse. But, yep, it's manipulation. It's...
Because it's really preventing a person from growing their way.
Yes.
So it's very constraining.
Because everybody thinks in the West, it seems to me, or a lot of people, I think people are shifting, I've certainly shifted, is that money is everything. So possessions are everything.
Do you think the problem in the West is really materialism?
Yes, I do. But also insecurity. When you think that some children have six parents, if they've divorced several times, and they're shunted from here to there. You know, the last thing children want is to pack their bags and go away for the weekend. They just want to sit at home and doodle or do nothing. I read somewhere recently that in a book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, is allow your child to be bored, because then they have to develop their own thinking about how not to be bored.
But you see, the media and so on, it doesn't allow a child to think for themselves or be bored or anything like this.
But this is why, if you're a parent, it's good to schedule in time with your children. I have to I should say this, but I used to get annoyed with my children's stepfather for their children, for his children. I took on three stepchildren in their teens. And he was always in the garden. We had a huge garden in northwest London, north London. And I said, why don't you just come in and be around so that they can talk to you? But he couldn't do that. He needed to be out there in the garden doing what he was doing. And of
maybe
course,
that was therapeutic for him.
It was therapeutic, but he was being very selfish. Because if you're just sitting there, like a mother is in the kitchen, if you're just sitting there, even if you're reading the paper or something on your sofa, the kid can come and plonk itself beside you and just lean. There's nothing more joyous for a child just to lean against their parent, knowing that their parent
they
is there.
They feel contact, they feel love.
Stability. If they want to say something, they can. You know, it's that presence. You don't have to speak even. It's just the presence. And people don't have time for that now.
Partly it's because you think the world is going faster and faster. Do you feel that?
I feel it's faster. I mean, I can't believe that, you know, so much of the year has gone already, but I think we're making it faster. I think people are rushing around because they've got to go and do two jobs, because they need money to be able to go on their holidays to...
So materialism is pushing us out of our own souls.
I think so. I think so. And you can't be content in that way. If you have any desire whatsoever, you cannot be content.
So
if you're dissatisfied,
what makes a person satisfied? What is the thing that satisfies a soul?
Possibly knowing that I have everything inside me that I need to make me happy.
But the whole world is all about making us feel unsatisfied.
Yep. I don't believe the world anymore.
So the person who is taking a stand spiritually is one who is saying, thank you very much, my old mobile phone is just fine, my bicycle is totally okay,
absolutely.
I don't need the latest, greatest.
Yeah.
But that is maybe, contributing to some drastic change in the economy, which is what people are very insecure about.
Definitely, but I think we have to make a stand. It's like a revolution in a way, because to bring things back to a simple life, it doesn't mean you have to be mean. If you have some money, buy a good fridge, buy a good car so that it runs. You know, don't penny pinch. That's not the point. But it's wanting more all the time, wanting more, that pressure you put on yourself. When as you sit back and you start appreciating what you've got,
so the
instead of the lack.
The virtue of appreciation is then very connected with contentment.
Yes. Appreciate what you have, not the lack. And any desire, really any little... I want. If ever I say I want something, I say, do I need it? I now have a shopping list. I will not buy, unless I force myself, anything that is not in that list. I don't need it. Otherwise, I would have thought about it at home. But if I see it on the counter or something, I grab it. And that's... What is it fulfilling? A very temporary need.
So there is some sort of emptiness in the soul that mitigates against the virtue of contentment.
I know for myself, for a very, very long time, I was missing something. I called it the missing link. I didn't know what the link was. I really didn't. But of course, for me personally, I found God.
So what is it that God gives a person which fills what hole in the soul?
Two words. Unconditional love.
Unconditional love.
And I have to add a sense of belonging. Mm. Because everybody is looking to belong to something or someone.
So part of the problem is loneliness.
Yes. Desperate loneliness in the West. Desperate. And there's no need to be lonely. You can be alone, but you don't need to feel lonely.
Is it because people have difficulty relating with each other?
I don't think they relate to themselves.
And could you put it down to materialism?
Personally, and I speak from experience, it's a dysfunctional family.
Okay.
Definitely.
What would be the signs of a dysfunctional family?
Unhappiness, non-loving. I actually don't remember having a meal with my parents.
So the closeness is missing.
Total.
Just personal contact.
I mean, I'm a war baby, so, you know, things were a bit difficult, but then I moved abroad very, very early, and life was actually quite good on the material side. But because there was tension and friction even then...
So sometimes you're saying materialism is used to substitute for the missing warmth of human kindness.
And it works for a little while sometimes, yes, of course it does. But it doesn't last.
Now, I think that, you know, a lot of our audience is from India, and we're seeing India getting more and more into the materialism. What caution would you mention for our brothers and sisters here in India?
As far as children are concerned, I would say don't push them. Ambition should be tempered. There's nothing wrong with ambition if the child is capable, but sometimes we push them too far.
Then the child could be under so much pressure. I know sometimes you get suicides because of failing exams and things like this.
And a lot of mental illness. Definitely. Yeah. People are disturbed.
Yeah. That's another thing that we can look at in another program.
Because they're not able to be themselves, their true, true self. And you have to find your way in life by experiencing different things. You will be a doctor because I'm a doctor. Why? Why?
I mean, perhaps in the olden times it was like that, but something different is happening now.
I think so.
Anyway, I'd like to thank you very much for your insights and your wisdom and for being with us in this conversation about contentment on the program Virtues for Life.
Accept karna doesn't mean ki sab kuch theek hai.
Ye underline karunga main ye line ko.
Accept karlo doesn't mean ki paristhiti theek hai. Accept karlo also doesn't mean ki jo samne wale ne kiya wo cheez theek hai. Accept karlo means vartaman samay us paristhiti ko face karne se pehle mere man ki sthiti theek hai. Kyunki मन की स्थिति को ठीक करे बिना जब मैं परिस्थिति को ठीक करने जाती हूँ तो परिस्थिति का प्रभाव मन पर पड़ जाता है
क्योंकि मैं पहले से हिला हुआ।
देखिए हमारी नई श्रृंखला बीइंग शक्ति अवेकनिंग विद ब्रह्मा कुमारीज में 11 जून से प्रतिदिन दोपहर 2:30 बजे सिर्फ पीस ऑफ माइंड चैनल पर।